Welcome, everyone. It is May 26th, and this is the spring 2017 Nutrition Counseling Roundtable call, as sort of a random collection of whoever wants to call in. And for those of you who haven't been on these calls before, I'll just give you a little bit of background. This is an informal gathering. It's not a structured seminar. I don't bring any materials or content to it. It's more sort of a sharing and question and answer setting. It's a great time to share resources that any of you may have, cool books or anything else you've run into. The overall topic is the counseling process in a nutrition care setting. And just one other that remind you of the technical thing. If you know you're going to have some noise on your end, you can mute your phone, either doing it right on your phone or doing 4-star, which will mute you, and then 4-star again will unmute you. Things seem pretty quiet right now, though. So it looks like we have about a dozen people, maybe. And this call is being recorded for the benefit of anyone who wants to listen in later, see if they can get any benefit from it. I'll share a few things first. My upcoming 2-day motivational interviewing trainings that I call the Counseling Intensive. There are a few more in this year. The next one's in Seattle. That's already sold out. That's June 9th and 10th. In the D.C. area, actually Bethesda, Maryland, July 28th and 29th. The registration deadline for that is June 30th. And then in the Boston area, UMass Lowell, Mass., will be hosting me on September 15th and 16th. And then I will be doing one in Philadelphia, December 8th and 9th. And in each case, the registration deadline is 1 month ahead, 4 weeks ahead, so that you have plenty of time to do the pre-workshop materials. The other thing I'm working on these days is setting up some dates for next year, for 2018. And Dallas is definitely on the list already. I've got a couple hosts that are battling over who's going to host me here. I think I've got a host for Charlotte, but if anybody, I'd love to go back to Charlotte. So if anybody knows they could host me there. The other two cities I'd particularly like to get to that I don't have a venue yet would be Los Angeles and Chicago areas. And in order to host me for the 2-day training there, all you need to do is have a room that I can use that holds up to about 24 people, and you get to come for free, and I take care of everything else, all the other arrangements. It's just the room that I need. So if anybody, particularly in the LA or Chicago area or in any other large city, would like to host me in 2018, do send me an email. So, well, welcome, everyone. We've had a few more people bounce onto the call. Looks like we have about 16 or 18 people right now. And so who would like to jump in with a resource to share or a question?
Molly, this is Jeannie. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. And your name again?
Jeannie, like Jeannie in a bottle.
Oh, Jeannie, hi.
Hi. I just wanted to get some feedback from you regarding a client experience I had recently. I had a referral.
I'm not sure how much I can give you if it's about a specific case. This isn't really supervision about specific cases. If there is some general question that would be helpful for everyone, I'd be able to see if I can try to answer it.
Sure. So I was trying to assess readiness to change in an initial assessment for a 17-year-old girl who came in with...
Excuse me, what was the age again? Your phone's cutting out. The age?
17,
okay.
So her mother accompanied her to the appointment, and what happened was her mother completed all the intake forms and answered most of the questions, and I really had difficulty engaging the daughter because she kept saying she didn't want to talk. And I did get her to tell me on a scale of 1 to 10 as far as how important important her concern was, you know, ending the bulimic eating behavior. She gave it a 5, and her mother was at a plus 10, and they scheduled a follow-up, and I just feel strongly that I need to see the daughter individually. I know the mother has a host of her own issues, understandably, so that's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, well, this is a kind of situation that I think all of us, or most of us, if we've been out there for a little while, have run into. We've run into this kind of thing where there's a family member, sometimes it's the spouse, sometimes it's a parent, basically does all the talking. And the actual client is, well, to use that old-fashioned word, resistant, really not wanting to be there and not wanting to engage. And this absolutely happened. Now, I will see if I can locate the tips that I wrote that addresses some of this, but I'll also, and I'll put that in the follow-up email that I send out to everyone. I can't remember which tip it is. I'll find it. But basically, it sounds like getting your impulse or your... your gut was telling you, I need to engage with this girl by herself. And I can't agree with you more. I think that's absolutely right. In order to help her, it may be necessary for the mother to have someone to engage with as well. I'm presuming this family or this girl has a therapist. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah,
and apparently that would be. She saw the therapist for the first time before she saw me, and she did see her alone.
Mm-hmm.
And the mother expressed to me that she doesn't know what they talked about, so it's difficult for her to know what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. Right. This is a situation where it sounds very important to keep close with the therapist, to talk with the therapist, of course, getting release from the daughter and the mom, since she's not 18 yet. You need the mom's signature. Make sure, though, that you're at least verbally getting permission from the daughter and that she understands that in order to best help her and her family, that you'll need to talk with the therapist. And I would, now it's hard because the therapist has only seen this and kid wants too. This is a situation where it makes sense to really learn from the therapist about how best to handle this particular family, because it does seem like it's the whole dynamic. It's not just the kid by herself. I completely agree that...
Mm-hmm. I called the therapist right after our meeting, and just to give you some background on her, she was the intern at our office, and they just hired her. So she's
relatively inexpensive and inexperienced.
Right, and my concern was that as the mother was leaving, she was all of a sudden just peppering me with questions about, am I going to be sending meal plans and basically wanting more materials from me. And I said to the therapist, she's putting the cart before the horse. I said, I can't provide meal plans. I don't know what your daughter's food preferences are. So I think I'm gonna have to be on my own with this one for a little bit, because I don't think the therapist, and I'm much older than the therapist, and I have a daughter. I have some life experiences with children that would help me relate to this family.
Yeah. Well, and this is, and I don't want to spend too much longer on this.
No, I agree.
Eating disorders are tough, and they can sort of take over. I absolutely agree with you that you're in what I often call the messy early stage of setting up a team and figuring out how to help this family. It's almost always messy. and you can acknowledge that, at least in your head.
Yeah.
Indeed, it makes sense to set it up ahead, even if it wasn't clear ahead, maybe calling the mom the day before and saying, what we're going to do this time is I will meet with both of you for 3 or 4 minutes, and then I'll ask you to wait in the waiting room while I work with your daughter. And just setting it up. You get to control that, Jeannie. It's your office. You get to, say how that's going to be done.
I like that idea, Molly. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And be sure to be willing to listen to the mom and contain it. For the kids' sake, if nothing else. And then you might want to review some of the tips on rolling with resistance and things like that, because that's what you're going to get when the mom walks out, right? You know, chances are she's not going to start easily talking. I mean, you might get lucky, but you might want to review some of that stuff about rolling with acknowledging to her that she doesn't want to be here, that she was dragged in, that, you know, things like that, to help see if you can get on her page.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Sure. I did find it's tip number 62, which would be in volume 3 of my practice workbook series. It's called Family of Clients. And if you don't happen to have volume 3, anybody on this call listens to it, you could, it's volume 3 of the practice workbook series, tip number 62. And you could email me and I'll send you a copy of that chapter if you don't happen to have it. Tough situation, and I hope you and the therapist have a supervisor or consultant that you can talk with about this case.
Well, it's a tough one. I could ask a third party, sure.
Yeah. Anybody else have any resources to share or questions?
I have a question.
Sure. Your name?
My name is Sarah.
Hello, Sarah. And where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Okay.
My struggle is I'd really like to have as a goal just to be reflecting and being present with my clients for about 5 or 10 minutes at least. During the initial part of our session. And I'm finding it really hard to come up with some good reflections. And so that's what I'm finding really challenging, that I switch over to questions really quickly. But I'd like to stay in the reflection stage, and I'm wondering if you have any tips for that, how to just be a better reflector.
Oh, what a wonderful question, Sarah. Tell me, I totally am on the same page with you in terms of, you know, having this goal of wanting to do more of that, particularly at the beginning of a session. Tell me first, what is it you hope to accomplish by devoting that time at the beginning to reflections?
I'm hoping to key into the internal motivation and also just hear more of the change talk. So, like, how do I get to a place where I'm really competent at making those, like, complex reflections that move the conversation forward to a place where they're talking about what they want to change and what they're excited about changing?
This is wonderful. I'm so glad you're working on this. There's no question the research shows that reserving some time at the beginning to work on engagement, which it sounds like you're talking about, basically getting onto the client's page, having them open up and say more about where they're at and what they want. I have a thought, and I'm not sure this is going to fit, but let me just say it anyway. It sounds like you're trying to stay away from questions altogether and just be making reflections. And in the engagement process, there is quite a role for open-ended questions.
Mm-hmm.
Avoiding closed-end questions at the beginning, however, is an excellent idea. There are plenty of open-ended questions, though, that get the ball rolling that then you can reflect. Now, what's your response to that idea, Sarah?
I think that's a good idea.
You sound hesitant.
I do tend to do that. I do tend to open with an open-ended question. And sometimes my reflections become questions. So I'd like to work on that.
Do you mean making a reflection, but then your voice goes up at the end?
Exactly.
Is that what you mean?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Someone's phone has a lot of noise. Someone whose phone ends with 2770, whoever that is, has a lot of...
Hey, Molly, this is Heather. That's my phone, but I had it on mute.
Oh, okay. It's not on mute now. Okay, do you want me to mute you?
Sure.
Yeah, because I see which yours is. Okay, there, I've muted you. So do a 4-star if you want to join us later. Okay, great. Thanks, Heather. Okay, Sarah, so where were we? We were talking about...
Yeah, open-ended questions, getting the ball rolling.
Yeah.
That's definitely what I try to do. And then I've noticed sometimes with clients, though, we'll get to a place that's more emotional or that obviously, like, moves them, and they kind of back away and don't really want to talk anymore about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is understandable. You're a relative stranger.
Exactly.
And they're realizing they want to close up. Are you wanting ideas about how to handle that? Or are you okay with that?
No, I think more I'm just wondering how do you get to a place where you're comfortable making those complex reflections? Do you quiet your mind down? Do you stop all of your internal thought process?
Well, that would certainly help. And Sarah, what you're describing here is that, of course, especially when we see a new person, we have someone else with a lot of noise in the background. If you could mute your phone, that would be great. One of the things to do is to acknowledge that, at least in your head and possibly even out loud, that you're going to get to all the details, you know, the 24-hour recall and all the stuff, you know, and all that. And you're going to get to that, and yet, and you're even timing yourself, Sarah. You said 5 or 10 minutes. You're opening up that space. So when you open it up at the beginning, say to yourself or maybe even to the client, how about we spend just 5 or 10 minutes here? I'd like to get to know you. Got to find out what's important to you, what's
thank
up,
you, so much.
You know, things like that.
You as well.
There's still someone who's got a lot of noise going on in the background.
So maybe telling them let's get to know each other for 5 to 10 minutes. That can sort of then maybe they can relax too about when am I going to tell her about all my food that I'm eating and when am I going to tell her about
right, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you could experiment with that. And that's something that I learned to do as a social worker, to be able to talk about what we're doing here, what we're going to do here, what, you know, that kind of thing. And it's okay to do that. I'm also hearing you say, Sarah, that you you're aware that you could get better at complex reflections, which would move the process along, allow the client to really be heard, and also hopefully bring out some more change talk. Congratulations for knowing what complex reflections are and for respecting them. What ideas, Sarah, do you have about maybe generally practicing making more complex reflections, even if you did it somewhere else, you know, maybe not with clients? Any thoughts you have about how you might practice it?
I could practice it with my husband at the dinner table and tell him that I want to practice it.
Right, to warn him ahead of time. Especially spouses. Right. You better warn them ahead of time, right? Otherwise they can get annoyed. Yeah, absolutely. And Sarah, you probably know this already, but for the sake of everyone else, I'll remind them that complex reflections are when you listen so carefully and with such a broad, open mind that you notice the meanings underneath the actual words that the person says. And you either pick up those meanings from maybe the tone or body language or something, or just from your general knowledge of people. So that, sure, you could reflect exactly the words that the person says. And instead, with a complex reflection, you go out on a limb a little bit. You gather and maybe sort of guess what they're saying. It's fun to do that with someone you know really well, like a spouse, because, you know, you have a little more information and, you know, you can sort of do that. If your husband's going on and on about the stupid people at work or something like that, and you can say you're really frustrated with your coworkers right now, right, which is not exactly what he said. He was saying Tom or Harry or whatever. And you've sort of gathered it, all of that, into one sort of main thing, the gist of it, if you will. Often a reflection is what you think is the gist of what the person is saying.
And then some.
Okay. And then some. I mean, the farther you go out on a limb, you might as well practice going pretty far out on the limb and see what happens. And with clients or with your husband, too, they'll pull you back if you goof. You know, they'll say, no, that isn't what I meant, you know. So you're going to keep practicing it and being willing to use open-ended questions as well. Have you been to my workshop?
No, I
haven't.
Or
use the online program? Because I have that two-page sheet, open-ended questions to further the process of change. It's actually in one of the tips somewhere. I can't remember which one. I'll see if I can quickly find it. It's a whole list. And it sounds like you particularly want to be using the open-ended questions that specifically tend to elicit reasons to change, because that's what you're looking. I think it's probably in tip number 60, which would also be in volume 3 of the practice workbook. There's a whole long list there of suggested questions, and there's this category there of open questions to further elicit reasons to change. And you may get some more ideas on there, too. How are we doing, Sarah?
Good, yeah. I think practicing and verbalizing at the beginning of the session what the intention is for the beginning of our meeting could be really helpful. And also not getting down on myself if I use an open-ended question. Have the goal to do mostly reflections.
You do have very high standards. You have very high standards. What was that? I'm sorry.
I said I just want to be perfect. That's all.
Right. As if there is such a thing as perfect, right?
Right. I know.
And remember that in MI, the sort of ideal ratio of reflections to questions is at least one. In other words, you have at least one reflection for each question. So, and especially in healthcare settings, it's really hard to even reach that. So, you know, questions are okay. I mean, we need to ask them sometimes. And there's some great open-ended ones. So,
cool. Thank you.
Okay. Well, cool.
Yes. Yeah,
let's see. Sure, sure. And you're in the L.A. area. Maybe I'll see you at my workshop sometime. You don't happen to have access to a meeting room that holds up to 24 people, do you?
I may. I'm going to look into that, and I will let you know.
Okay. Awesome. Awesome.
Okay, cool.
Please do. Yep. Okay. Who else is here who would like to either share a resource or ask a question? Got a quiet group. Looks like there are about 16 people on the call. Sometimes we have a little more. Any random questions are welcome.
I will throw a question out there.
Sure. Who is this?
This is Beverly in Billings, Montana.
Hello, Beverly.
Hi. So,
welcome.
This kind of, I'm going to kind of go off on the vein of the previous caller and reflective question.
Sure.
And in my work, I'm required to weigh people in a interventional setting for lifestyle change for data purposes.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a client who has kind of hit the slippery slope and has relapsed into some weight gain, and she's, you know, much farther down the road than where she started, but she gets caught up in a kind of a negative thinking train and a guilt and shame, you know, why couldn't I have, you know, kept going? And on a, as a side note, we've been able to kind of uncover some other stuff that she has some depression, and
I
talked with her about that and got her into, she was able to find a counselor, and she's on some antidepressants.
Oh, gosh, we're having some background noise again. Beverly, if you could tell me, what's your area code?
406.
Yeah, I see you there. Okay, so I'm going to mute where this other noise is coming from. Okay, Beverly, I think you're still here.
Okay.
Okay.
So anyway, kind of got that on the,
sure,
on the side. It sounds like she's making progress in that area. She's feeling more uplifted, that she's kind of, she said, she described it as seeing the light at the end of the tunnel with this depression.
Yeah.
She's got some things on, meds on board,
great,
counseling and such. But anyway, she is fearful of coming back to class and participating in the weigh-in that she needs to do, because that brings on shame and guilt if she has in fact gained weight. And we talked about just maybe working on maintenance and such. But anyway, as she was sharing this with me, I was trying to have her explore that a little bit, and I'd be anxious or eager to hear how you might reflect something like that back to her to get her to explore that a little bit and maybe get a little more comfortable with that.
Are you saying explore the fear and shame?
Just the
negative thinking, and
yeah,
there's a lot going on in there.
I know, there is, yeah, totally.
Uh-huh.
She did express that she was planning on coming, and she was kind of determined to try to work through that. But I'm just wondering if there wasn't something I could have. I actually suggested she take up that with her counselor. That she's going to see.
Absolutely. Is the counselor in your program?
No. No, it's,
or is it, it's someone different. Okay, so, and you don't have a release to speak with that person?
No, no.
Okay. If it's someone she's working with ongoing, you, you might, depending on how you feel, you might ask permission to speak with that person.
Okay.
It could be useful both for you and for her. I wouldn't push it. This isn't one of those eating disorder situations where you really have to, but, you still ask at least. I do have some thoughts. My first one has to do with acknowledging whatever you hear. I hear you're nervous about coming, whatever words she uses, sort of stick close with her words, where it's nervous or doesn't want to come or, wary or whatever, just sort of, I hear you. Yeah. And I hear you're also aware that it's useful for you to continue to come to the group and that you're game, so you just sort of reflect her ambivalence, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's tricky because what you're talking about is shame, and shame's a big deal. It's like a big elephant in the room. And indeed, it makes sense to find a way to acknowledge it. You, however, are not the one who is going to be addressing the underlying issues with her. Mm-hmm. So it's not as if you want to invite opening the entire Pandora's box.
Okay.
But you don't want to ignore it. And I'm hearing that from you, Beverly. You don't want to just sort of ignore it and plow through in some way. And it wouldn't be respectful of her. Now, are there ways in which, does the whole group see the number or is it just
No,
you,
it's
or,
private.
Yeah, it is private. Okay. And, I'm presuming you're respectful in terms of either not saying anything about the number or just allowing her to speak a little bit if she needs to.
And sometimes I've had a few people who just really did not want to kind of participate in that, but they were willing to kind of turn around and do it for the data's sake.
Oh, do a blind way.
I had to collect.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so as I'm sitting here thinking, well, maybe I could invite her to, is that an option, if that would be helpful to her? I don't know.
Absolutely. I was thinking of that. If, for the purposes of the program, you do have to get the number, and if it could be that seeing the number might throw her off, if you will. You could offer that. And it's tricky because you don't want to imply to her that, oh, my God, this number is awful and you're going to feel terrible.
Yeah.
You sort of don't want to imply that, obviously.
Yeah.
You just and the way I do it, I do blind weights a lot. I have quite a discussion with the person ahead of time. And I ask them, what does your mind do with the number when you see it? Most people can very easily tell you, I beat myself up, any little change up, I'm upset, and they'll say all this. And it sounds like she has a lot of negative thinking. So you could say, I hear you that part of you that does that, all that beating yourself up tends to get really strong whenever you get on the scale. We could just have you jump on the scale facing the other direction and, we'll get our piece of data and we'll move on. How would you think about that? And asking her input, not making her do one or the other.
Okay.
How does that sound?
Yeah, that sounds good. The writing reflex part of me somehow wants to help her come to terms with that, checking in on that and not judging herself based on that. But maybe that's just not, I don't know how, if you feel that's appropriate or how you would go down that road or just maybe
I would
go and over time.
I would follow her lead, making offers, though, because if in the program, part of your job is to help people with, negative cognitions that get in the way and self-criticism and all that, you can gently point out when those critical voices come up and ask whether that's something she'd like to work on, might that be a goal of hers, that kind of thing. Again, sort of allowing her to have the lead.
I like that. You could recognize that she's having that and saying, is that something you would like to work on or talk more about. And then
mm-hmm.
she can.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I like that piece.
Because it's,
I think that's
it's her critical voices. And so it's not, I get your writing reflex thing activated by that. Because it downright hurts, doesn't it? I mean, it hurts you when you hear that stuff, you know, because it's so negative, right? And indeed, it makes sense to sort of take a deep breath. And these are her critical voices. They're there. She lives with them a lot more than you do. You can offer to listen with her and see about ways you could work with that. It's up to her. She may not notice them. She may be so blended with them a lot of the time that she doesn't sort of see them as.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Great. Thank you.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Well, thank you, Beverly. Boy, you've had some questions, interesting questions today. I'm glad you brought that up. So, anybody else got any questions or resources? Or does anybody have one of the tips of mine that you've read that you'd like to share? Something cool when you did it. It's always fun to hear success stories. Wonderful things that happened when we shift our skills a bit. Anybody? Well, if there isn't anything else, we certainly could wind up the call. I'll say a few other things, and then I'll give you one more chance to ask questions. I just have in front of me my alphabetical list of the tips that I've written. And there are an awful lot of them because I've been doing this for a while. I often forget even what I've got in here. So if any of you at any time sort of wonder whether I've already written a tip on a certain topic, email me and I'll, if I can easily find it, I'll send it along to you. I'm also glad to send a PDF copy of individual tips here and there that are not on my archives. The ones on my archives are about somewhere around number 80 and later. It's the ones that are already in the practice workbooks that are not on the archives anymore. So if you want one of the other ones, I could send you an individual tip. I do urge you to get the books, though, because then it's handy. You can just refer to them. And I'd love to see any of you at my 2-day trainings coming up, the motivational interviewing trainings. Some of you may notice that I've also begun doing training on internal family systems, which is a type of psychotherapy. There are a few of us dietitians who have done IFS training, and find it incredibly useful, even in our dietitian work. And many of you know, of course, that I'm a psychotherapist as well, and I have therapy clients, and it's IFS is very powerful in psychotherapy. And I use it also with my nutrition clients when somebody else is the person's therapist and I'm the person's dietitian. We offered this as a one-day program in Boston last month, and we're going to be rolling it out and doing a few others, probably two next year, three if we can manage, in probably St. Louis, probably the Twin Cities, and then maybe Southern California. We're not sure, but stay tuned. I assume all of you are on my email list. That's how you heard about this call, and you'll hear about other resources coming up. So this was a great call, a lot of good questions. Any other questions or thoughts come up? Okay, well, we'll wind this up and we'll do another random roundtable call in about 3 or 4 months. Okay, take care, everyone, and have a good Memorial Day weekend.
Thank you, Molly.
Bye-bye.